folks, welcome to Paisa Paisa. I'm your host Anupam Gupta, B50 on Twitter, and I hope all of you are staying safe. And as always, our gratitude and thanks to everyone on the front line battling this battle for us, the health workers, the civic authorities, the police, every one of them. Thanks a lot from all of us. Folks, this is a really super duper special episode. It's about a topic that I've received a lot of requests on. It's a topic that I myself am very interested in because it is a product which is very new. It's very niche also. Not many people know about it, but those who do know how it works, it's also something that has come up in the last 5-10 years. It's also special because the guest that I've got is a veteran blogger, and he is among the most well-known names out there to talk about this subject. He runs the blog Alpha Ideas, and it's not easy to get him for a recording, which is why a special thanks and a shout out to Pradeep Naluri for making the introduction to us. Pradeep, if you're listening in, thank you for doing this for us. So, folks, without further ado, let me welcome Nitin Rao of Alpha Ideas. Nitin, welcome to Paisa Paisa. Thank you so much for doing this for us. I remember last week we were chatting about your background, and good Lord, you've got a really fascinating background. I could probably do an entire episode on that. But for the benefit of our listeners, just run us through very quickly, very briefly about what all you've done in life, you know, and how you got to run the Alpha Ideas blog. Let's start from there.
Thank you, Anupam. Great to be on this show. I've been following you on Twitter all this while, and it's a real pleasure to be on this show now. For the audience out there, like Anupam mentioned, my name is Nitin Rao, and I run a blog called Alpha Ideas. My background is, I did my computer engineering from VJTI, and I done my MBA from IFT New Delhi. I was in the corporate sector, mostly in the technology side, for around 10 odd years. I had a passion for the markets, and around 10 years back, that is 2009, I became a full-time investor. So the full-time investor, like the profile suggests, is I invest in the markets for a living. I'm not an investment advisor. I'm not a financial advisor. I just invest my own capital. And that's how I make my living. In 2012, I started Alpha Ideas, mainly because I like reading a lot. And I thought it would be interesting to share some of the links that I read. And that led to the rise of Alpha Ideas. Alpha Ideas is a very simple blog, and if you can check it out, it's very simple and uncluttered. Around that time, 2013, 2014, I became interested in unlisted shares. Unlisted shares are shares that are not listed on the stock exchanges. They're also known as pre-IPO shares. So pre-IPO, like it suggests, something that you buy before an IPO, in the hope that as and when the company lists and gets traded on the exchange, you can make a living out of that. So now that's around 6 odd years of doing unlisted shares as well. So I think I'll guess that's a brief profile about me.
Great. Thanks, Nitin. Thank you so much for that. Nitin, let's start with this unlisted market. We are in 2020. You started this in 2014. So you've seen this for 6 years. Can you tell our listeners as to how this starts? Because see, for a publicly listed company, it's fairly easy. The promoters come to the markets, and they raise capital. But the unlisted market, how does it work? Where does it form? Who are the people who provide shares? Who are the people who buy shares? And I like the fact that you also call it the pre-IPO market, right? Because if the IPO doesn't happen, then, I'm probably stuck with shares that might not even be traded publicly. So let's have an origin story for the unlisted market. So how it works, where the shares come from, who's buying?
The unlisted shares, or what I like to call them as a pre-IPO shares, in the Indian market, in the Indian context, they've been around for a long time. I mean, let's say more than 15 years, 20 years and so on. In the West, it's very common because, you have in the Silicon Valley, you have companies which give ESOPs to their employees. And there's a market in those ESOPs to the employees. Now, let's come to the Indian context back. Now, in the Indian context, we have a couple of kinds of companies which are not listed, but whose shares exist. Now, just to give an example, you had a bank, let's say like Ratnakar Bank, which is now RBL Bank. So this bank is 70 plus years old, now 75 years old. And it had, when it started the bank, it had given shares to its depositors, to its lenders. So that created a market or a shareholder base, even though the shares were not listed on the exchanges. Another example is Catholic Syrian Bank, which is listed now, but this bank is close to 100 years old bank. Similarly, they had given shares to their depositors, to the community, and therefore a share market existed even though not listed. A different example is Bombay Stock Exchange. Bombay Stock Exchange is, had a membership scheme. When it got corporatized, in lieu of the membership, the brokers got shares, and therefore you had an existing shareholder even though they were not listed on the stock exchanges. Another example, a different kind of example, is ESOPs that are given to employees. So ICICI Prudential Life gave ESOPs to its employees. They got vested and the employees were willing to sell their shares. Same is true for Religare Health Insurance. Another kind of category where shares come into the market is something like a Chennai Super Kings. So India Cement shareholders got shares of Chennai Super Kings. That is not yet listed on the stock exchanges, but an existing shareholder base exists. So these are three or four ways where you have a large block of shares that exist, even though the shares are not listed on the stock exchanges.
Okay. So Nitin, explain to me one thing. How does one deal in these shares? In the sense that for publicly listed shares, I just have to call my broker. That's it. He is the market maker, or rather he arranges for the buyer or for the seller if I have shares to sell or if I want shares. But if I'm an employee of XYZ company and my stock, and I've been given, say, 100 shares of XYZ as part of my ESOPs, I work long enough so that they vest in me and I actually buy it and I decide, hey, listen, I want to sell it. But who do I go to? Where do I, as someone who's a participant in this pre-IPO market, can you just give us the backend story of this as to how it works? Because I just want to understand that.
Sure. Now to your question, who can sell shares in the IPO or a pre-IPO? Who can buy shares in a pre-IPO? Let me just go through the modalities in a very simple fashion. So the first question is, who can sell shares in a pre-IPO? So the answer is very obvious. The existing shareholders of the company can sell shares. A related question, is the company anyway involved in selling shares in a pre-IPO? The answer is no. This is a secondary transaction. It is not a primary transaction. So suppose you have ESOPs of a company and you vest into shares, and when you sell the shares, your company is not involved in that transaction. It is just between you and the buyer. The next question that frequently gets asked is, are the shares being sold in the demat form? And the answer is again, yes, all the shares are sold in the demat form. There is no paper form. This comes as a surprise to a lot of people because they think that only listed companies can have demat accounts. But that is not the case. Any company that has got more than 100 shareholders can pass a board resolution and get his shares dematerialized with NSDL or CDSL. Now the question comes, who do you approach to sell your shares? So you can approach, let's say someone like me or some of the dealers in the market, some of the brokers. You can approach them and say that I want to sell my shares. So then they agree upon a price. And if you think the price is okay, you can go ahead and sell your shares. So the process is also very simple. You confirm the quantity or what is known as a deal. So you say that, hey, I want to sell 100 shares at $100. So that there's an email confirmation to that. You provide your bank account details. I provide my demat account details. And then on the trade settlement date, I transfer the money to your bank account via NEFT or RTGS. Once you get the funds, you transfer the shares in an off-market transaction to me. I'll get the shares the same day and the deal is done, So that's how the process of selling shares in an IPO does. The reverse is exactly the same when you're buying shares. So you want to buy shares of XYZ company from me. I give my bank account. You give me your DMAT account. You transfer the funds to me and I transfer the shares to you. And I issue you a sale note. So it's very straightforward. In fact, it's faster than the stock exchange because a stock exchange takes T+2 for the trade settlement to happen. So suppose you buy something today. The shares get reflected in your DMAT account on T+2 days. Whereas in a unlisted or a pre-IPO market, the shares get reflected in your DMAT account the same day. So that's more or less the process of the IPO.
you know, this is okay. The reason why I'm laughing is this, you know, somehow it reminds me of a 70s or 80s Bollywood movie. You know, I need to give money to someone, so aadha note main deta hu, aadha note uske paas hai. Aur wo mujhe aadha note dikhata hai, then the deal happens, right? Because here's the thing. I mean, I'm thinking counterparty risk. Agar samne wala bhag gaya isme, so I have transferred my shares to you, or let's say you've given the money to me, either of them can run away. So I'm guessing that trust in the intermediary is a very important thing here. Unlike in the publicly listed market where the exchange stands behind you or there is some recourse out there. Could you just tell us that, you know, because I want to just understand that risk aspect out here.
It's a very valid point. In the listed market, the exchanges take the counterparty risk. So you buy something, you don't really care on who the seller is. If you sell something, you don't really care who the buyer is, because as far as you are concerned, your counterparty is the exchange. But that is not the case in a pre-IPO or unlisted share deal. In the pre-IPO market, there's no exchange. There's nobody who guarantees the counterparty. So you have to trust the counterparty. So, and that is why everything happens, there needs to be documentation, meaning the email that is sent, you're transferring funds only through online channels, you're getting the shares in your DMAT, there's no paper or anything, everything is electronic. So that is one way to reduce counterparty risk. Another way to reduce counterparty risk is only through references. So you get references from someone who has dealt with that particular dealer before or that broker before, the counterparty before, and then you can proceed. Some of the larger deals that happen, where the ticket size is fairly large, people use escrow accounts where you pay money to a bank, they have an escrow involved, and then you pay fees to the bank. The DMAT, the shares and the funds are deposited, and the bank ensures the trade settlement. But that is because of the expenses involved, it makes sense to go for an escrow only for very large ticket kind of deals.
And finally, what are the costs involved out here? Because in the stock market, brokerages have the brokerage cost, which is fairly standard. You know, it could be zero in case of some brokerages, and others typically charge between, I don't know, 0.5% and stuff like that. And then there is a security transaction tax, there is GST, etc. So what are the costs involved out here?
Here, what happens is what you're doing generally is what is known as a secondary of market deal. So it is a deal. So say I'm buying shares from you. In that case, I am your counterparty. Therefore, there's no brokerage involved. So how someone like me or an unlisted dealer makes money, suppose I buy it from you at 100 bucks, I'll sell it to someone at 101 buck. So I make money from the spread, or I make money from the market making. I and other people, they don't make money from the brokerage. That happens in, let's say, 95% of the cases or 98% of the cases. In the rare case where the ticket size is very large and the dealer cannot take such a large block of shares on his book, then you go for a brokerage or a commission kind of a deal.
Understood. Great. So, folks, we're going to take a small break out here. On the other side, the really interesting part, the risk-return profile of the unlisted market. We've spoken about how this entire thing works on the back end and what exactly it is. But what are the risks when you buy an unlisted share? And what have the past returns shown? And there's no one better than Nitin to tell us about all this. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on this really special episode of Paisa Vaisa. And welcome back to this really special episode of Paisa Vaisa. My guest, Nitin Rao of Alpha Ideas. We are talking about the unlisted share market or the pre-IPO market. In the first part of the show, we spoke about how it works. In this part, we're going to get into the real fun part. How does it operate? Nitin, tell us here. You know, on your website, you have this FAQ on the pre-IPO market where there is a specific question on risk return. So let's just walk through that. You know, if I'm someone who is buying shares, what is the risk that I am taking, including stuff like whether the IPO happens or not, and what are the returns that you have seen tracking all these companies in the pre-IPO market, because their prices are not public. only till recently some sites have started publishing the prices of these stocks. Nahi to uske pehle to wo bhi nahi tha. So let's get into these three aspects: risk, return, and probably pricing and price discovery. Let's talk about that.
Okay, thanks Anupam. The risk that an investor takes while buying a pre-IPO, the three or four kinds of risk. The first risk is management risk. So when you buy and that we have seen even in the listed space, you buy a script and the management doesn't perform poorly or starts showing losses, the share price tanks. So same thing is applicable over here also. You buy a company, the management doesn't execute well, doesn't deliver, it's not an A-grade management, then the share price really goes for a toss. And suddenly you have a share that is, worth half the price that you paid much earlier. So that is one big risk related to management. The second risk is related to timeline risk. The timeline risk is you're expecting the IPO to happen, let's say in a year's time, but it doesn't happen. There are some instances of unlisted scripts where the shareholder approval has been given. Let's say take the example of Catholic Syrian Bank. The shareholders of Catholic Syrian Bank give approval for IPO around 3 or 4 years in a row, and then finally the IPO happened. So this is the timeline risk that we're talking about, that because you're a minority shareholder, the market conditions keep changing, you have no clue on when the IPO will happen. In some scripts, let's take HDFC Securities as an example. The management themselves say that there are no plans for an IPO. Or an SDB Financial, which is the financial services arm of HDFC Bank. The management again say there's no plans for an IPO, that, rumors keep public, but there are no plans. So there is a timeline risk that is there. Third is liquidity risk. Liquidity risk is when, you say that, hey, I want to sell my shares, and there's just no liquidity in the market. Like, for example, now, as of now, because the listed markets are not doing well, the liquidity in the illiquid markets has also dried up. So there's a liquidity risk here. So you'll not be able to sell your shares in a hurry. And if you are insistent, the price that you may get will be at a sharp discount. Coming to this liquidity, I always tell people that look at unlisted the way you look at real estate. In the sense that a lot of the things that we talked about here are comparable to real estate. So you have a counterparty risk that we discussed earlier. When you're buying a property, oh, builder flat dega, nahi dega, the seller, uska title clear hai, nahi hai. So there's some element of counterparty risk there. There's a liquidity risk also, because I want to sell my flat in Mumbai, I'll not get a buyer at my price. I'll have to, sell at 30-40% discount if I want to get rid of it tomorrow. Similarly, there's a timeline risk. Give money to a builder and the project doesn't get over only. And last is management risk, which we all know about. Builder nahi kaam karega, then we are in a soup. So there are a lot of analogies between unlisted and the real estate market. And that's the same principles that you have to keep in mind, which is number one, go for an A-grade management. Number two, don't put in money that you'll need in a hurry. Number three is be okay with timeline risk. So suppose you have a fantastic property. What do you care if it gets sold 1 year or 2 years or 3 years from now? Similarly, if you have a gem, say you own a company, let's say like ICICI Lombard, what do you care if it gets listed 1 year later or 2 years later? You know the company is growing, the business is growing, and you're okay with it not being listed. So these are some of the risks, and these are some of the ways to handle that risk as well. Coming to the returns part of it, the returns of this is... the first thing you have to ask yourself is, why the hell should I invest in a pre-IPO? I understood the risk, but why should I invest in anyways? Now, if you think carefully, if you look at the type of companies that are coming for an IPO, you take any of the companies that have come, and most of them are meant to give exits to private equity investors who had invested before. You take a look at Dr. Lalpath, Thyrocare, Narayana Yudhalai, L&T Infotech. You take a look at a lot of these names and you find that there was a PE guy, the latest example being SBI Cards, where Carlyle had invested. And a lot of these names, you realize that the companies that are coming for an IPO don't really require growth capital. Their growth has already been done, or the fastest phases of their growth are already behind them. And the IPO is to provide an exit to the private equity investors or the anchor investors or the marquee investors who are already listed in these names. So you are buying a company at not really the beginning or the middle of the growth phase, but somewhere towards the later part of the cycle. So what, when you invest in a pre-IPO, in a good pre-IPO, it helps you to participate in the growth of a company. It helps you to get opportunities that otherwise would only be available to big entities like PE firms. Like, for example, people bought pre-IPO shares of ICICI Prudential. The other person who brought ICICI Prudential pre-IPO is Azim Premji, and he, you know, invested 150 crores. Here you can get the same deal for 50,000 bucks, you know. Similarly, it's true for ICICI Lombard or for RBL Bank. RBL Bank, you know, in its glory days, the stock price had gone up from 100 rupees all the way to 700 rupees. And you had the who's who of the PE world investing in that company. So you have a situation as a small investor, as a retail investor, to get in a name which otherwise you'll really need big bucks for. And thirdly, you could have gotten at very reasonable valuations. That is not the case now. But in the beginning of the cycle, of the unlisted cycle, you could have gotten some of the greatest names at the cheapest prices. So just to give an example, people who bought ICICI Prudential Life at 120, the stock went up all the way to, you know, 500 bucks. ICICI Lombard, people bought at 140, 150. At its peak, it, you know, now it's 1200 bucks odd. RBL Bank started at 100 bucks, peak was 700 bucks. Of course, now RBL Bank has completed the entire cycle. SDB Financial, which is people compare it to Bajaj Finance. We started market making it when it was 150 rupees a share. Then it went up all the way in SDB in the unlisted space to 1200 bucks. So you're talking about a return of 8 times, 9 times your money in 5 years, 6 years, and so on. So those were the kind of returns that investors made in pre-IPO unlisted scripts. One very good example is also Paytm. Paytm in the up cycle, you know, the valuations exploded, and one part of the holding company shares were available in unlisted space. So some people made money over there as well. So these are the kind of returns that people got by investing in, if I may say, marquee names. On the flip side, if you had invested in a company where the management was not that great or the results were not good, then your returns would have been subpar. Then you would have been disappointed with the kind of investments that you have done.
Wow, that's a lot to digest, yeah. Nitin, just two questions. Okay, the first is there a minimum quantity or a minimum amount that I have to put in? Tell us about that. And then, you know, you've told us about how the prices have moved for this whole bunch of good companies, great companies. In fact, some of them have in fact yet to be listed. If at all they list, they might not. I don't know. So just walk us through, how does price discovery or price movement happen here at all? You know, because in the secondary market, prices are driven by anything. It could just be some news event. It could be someone saying something, and prices change there by the minute. Here, there is no exchange. There are no trading hours. There's nothing out here. So how, on what basis does price move here for any company in the unlisted shares market?
Okay. Your first question is, you know, the price, the ticket size can be as yes. low as 25 to 50,000 rupees, depending on the script that you're talking about. So that is as far as the minimum ticket size is concerned. The second aspect is related to price discovery. The price discovery in unlisted, you know, becomes very tricky because prices keep changing. And just like the real estate market, there's no real, there's no exchange which says that, hey, this is the kind of price that is there. So typically what happens is any script that happens, the price discovery happens in 3-4 areas. First is demand and supply. So if there's a lot of demand for a particular script and the supply is very limited, the price goes up. Conversely, if there's a lot of supply and the demand is less, the price goes down. So that's point one. Point two is when a marquee deal happens. So just to give an example, if a private equity firm buys into an unlisted, the price at which they did the deal becomes like the base price. So that happened, let's say, in RBL Bank. That happened recently with the Religare Health Insurance when Kedara took a stake in it. So that's secondly, investment in the company that sets the base price. The third thing is news flow. If any positive news flow comes about the stock, the price goes up. If some negative news flow comes, the stock goes down. Fourthly is comparable valuations in the listed space. So if you have a bank in the listed space and you have another bank in the unlisted space, people will always compare the unlisted to the listed. Very similar to how private equity firms do their deals. They do a comparative valuation and they say that, hey, a similar company is trading for more or less over here. So there's no reason why I should buy or sell this company at this particular price. So these are basically the four parameters that happen. Then just like in real estate, if you want to get a gauge or feel, then you can contact two or three dealers or people who invest or deal in these scripts. And you get a rough idea of what the price is trading at.
Fantastic. So Nitin, wrap up. Tell us about where our listeners can get in touch with you. Because I know your blog, alphaideas.in. And man, once I go here, matlab aadha pauna ghanta to aise hi chala jata hai, and that is on your main post. So folks, please visit, if you've not already, that is because Alpha Ideas is one of the oldest and most detailed blogs that you have in India on the market. So the blog is alphaideas.in, alphaideas.in. Man, so Nitin, where do you find the time, man? Look at the book reviews out here. So many of them, man. Tell us something about your blog, how people can get in touch with you. And I don't know, just, you know, I really want to talk about this. Go on.
Thanks, Anupam, for your kind words. The blog is, like I said, a very simple blog. I like reading. And that's one of the reasons I started the blog. Coming to how they can get in touch with me, they can, email me. The email is there on the blog, or they can follow me on Twitter. Twitter handle is @AlphaIdeas. And the blog is a forecast-free blog, so there are no tips or anything like that on the blog. It is just like an investment blog, which I have tried to maintain over there.
Fantastic. Books, come on. Okay, just tell us offhandedly, any recommendations for our listeners, because I think some of us have a lot of time. A lot of people are discovering reading books, and I can see from your book review section that you've got such a fascinating array of choices. So just give us, I don't know, maybe your top three, your top five, or anything that you have on what books should our listeners be reading.
Okay. Well, I am basically the kind of guy, I'm a history nut. So I read a lot of history. I like reading biographies, and I like reading about the stock markets and things like that. So some of the books that I really liked will also help the leaders who are probably investors to help them. One book that I'll recommend is The CEO Factory by Sudhir Sitapati. Sudhir is one of the best FMCG managers in India. He works for HUL. And if you want to understand how a FMCG company works, which is HUL, and you have to read this book. The second book that I'll recommend is on Titan, which is, I think, one of the greatest companies in India, one of the most fantastic cultures that you can find anywhere in the world. That's written by Vinay Kamath. And the book is really exhilarating in the sense that how this company grew despite all obstacles to be where it is today. Another book which I liked is a slightly older book. It's called Modern Monopolies. It's about the platform because, I noticed that in India, fund managers and other people, they keep talking about platforms, but generally they do not have a clue on what a platform really is, So, and if you look at the S&P 500 in the US, most of the earnings are not dominated by platforms like companies like Apple, Google, Facebook, Amazon, people like that. So Microsoft. So if you want to understand where the earnings growth or the profit pool in the world is going, this book will help you understand that. Another book that I really liked is a book called Unstoppable. It's about Kuldeep Singh Dhingra and the rise of Berger Paints. It's about a grassroots story about an Indian entrepreneur and how he rose really to the top. I found it fairly fascinating. He was majorly into exports into Russia, where he made his money. There's a incident in that book where he negotiated with Vijay Mallya to buy Berger Paints. Really fascinating. Another book is on Dilip Sanghvi, the founder of Sun Pharma. Dilip Sanghvi's family hails from my same area in Mumbai, which is Matunga. And so I have a thoda affection for this guy and how he, became the richest man in India at one point in time. Again, a very fascinating book. Again, interesting, considering a lot of interest in pharma stocks these days. So these are some of the books that I will recommend to the listeners.
Fantastic, Nitin. And there are many, many more. Folks, the website alphaideas.in, look at the section for book reviews. It's all out there. And that is a wrap on this really, really special episode of Paisa Vaisa. Call it the unlisted market. You call it the pre-IPO market. My guest, Nitin Rao of Alpha Ideas. Nitin, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for doing this for us and explaining this market to our listeners.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Anup.
No material on the show should be considered as financial advice. The material on the show is for informational purposes only. Please consult a financial advisor before taking any investment decision.